the Men of Eight Gang podcast for Saturday, June 5th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning. I thought that was Hawaii 5-0 for a second.
There we go. Phil Wilson.
Hello, how are you?
And Graham Thickens.
Yeah, and Hawaii 5-0 is coming back.
It is.
I can't wait.
Oh, well. Yeah,
really?
But McGarrett's not coming back, is he?
No, those guys are all dead, but they've got a new show coming. They're testing it or something.
The first show ever to successfully get tires to squeal on dirt. That would be the show.
Did they really?
Good old Hawaiian red dirt.
Oh, how funny. Well, we also have a very special guest on today. The HTC Evo 4G mobile smartphone.
We do?
Isn't it near you, Phil?
Yes, it is, right here in my hot little hand.
And we're going to have to
talk. Is it out of battery yet?
No, actually, I haven't had that much trouble with it. But then again, I really haven't put it through its paces yet because, after picking it up yesterday, I really did have to get some work done. So
there you go.
I had to leave it out of the room so I wouldn't play with it all day.
Yeah, but have you been goofing with it?
No, actually, I've got some video that I'll post up on Minivate and on the Remain Com site as well, but of my adventure yesterday morning. But I got up crack of dawn and headed over there to be in line by 6:00. And when I pulled up, there was nobody in line.
Which store was this?
The one in Apple Valley. And by the time they had opened the doors, I would say maybe 30 people in line.
So when did they say we were going to get 4G here in the Twin Cities?
You know, they haven't said. I could barely get them to talk about their plans for the Evo, much less get them to talk about any future stuff. I think they're fairly tight-lipped. I keep hearing midsummer, but that's what I'm hearing. And somebody told me that the system is there, it's ready to go. It's just taking final government approval to turn on the switch. So. That's what I've heard.
I think Clearwire is coming as well, which is running on the same network, of course. Since
right.
Clearwire is, I guess Sprint is a big investor in that. So we'll get WiMAX and 4G for phone at the same time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You guys remember Matt Albiniak, right? Works for Sierra Bravo, and he's the other Chicago office now. He tweets me when I talk about picking up the Evo. I said, well, I'll just get ready for real slow connection. And I said, dude, I'm coming from a Palm Trio. Do you really think I'm going to notice a slow connection?
So since you had the Incredible for a while to test it out, kind of give your impression kind of between the two. What do you think?
Well, between the two, when I first picked up the Incredible, the only thing that really stuck out to me was the size. It's a nice size unit, but it was just a little narrow for me. I have fairly long hands. That was a little narrow for me. So I that was one of the reasons I wanted to wait for the Evo to come out. To be honest, the Evo is pretty freaking big. It's a big machine. It's not as big as I thought it was going to be, but it's much bigger. The screen is, obviously a 4.3-inch screen. It's a beautiful screen and really looks good. And this flies as fast as the Incredible does. But I think that the big issue is the screen resolution. Brian Nagy pointed out in his review of the Incredible, the screen is not quite as vibrant as the Incredible screen.
Because it's not OLED, right? It's just a regular LCD panel.
Right, regular LCD panel. So
but that when I was using the Incredible, I loved it inside, but outside you couldn't read it at all unless you turn the brightness all the way up. And I found that to be a big problem, given that the battery life is a huge problem with those phones.
Yeah, and that's going to be the issue that I think will plague me the most is the battery life, but I really like it. It's a nice machine. And again, I haven't had enough time to. I got a notification with a little Sprint symbol this morning, and damned if I know what that means. So
I'll send you a link to an application you should install for
that,
just to manage your resources so you don't run your battery down.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
See. That's what I love about the Android community. And I got to tell you, shout out to my folks over at the Sprint store. Evan actually is the one that convinced me to go ahead and just take the plunge into this, the Sprint, continue with Sprint, which I've been with them for about 6 years now. And it's been spotty as far as customer service. But these are the folks at this store were great. And they really convinced me to go ahead and recommit for another 2 years.
So from your house, is the 3G coverage better than the Verizon 3D? 3G?
I don't have 3G running. It's not running right now at all. So I can't, I look at my display and I'm strictly a, no 3G.
So what do you have as a connection then?
Hmm?
What do you have as a connection then?
Well, right now it's on Wi-Fi, but it's also, you know, just the regular cell phone network, whatever you would call that.
Yeah, it's a 2G. So it's running equivalent of Edge on Sprint. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right.
And I've got 3 or 4 bars, which is about typical for me here in Lakeville for Sprint. And the Verizon, I had some issues. I was down to 1 bar at times in the Verizon.
So speaking of 3G, both Graham and Steve, you both have iPhones. Are you going to get the new one when it comes out?
Yep. I don't even care. I don't even care what it is.
So you're gonna do your old Craigslist and get your $200 and then go and get the new one, huh?
If I can, yeah.
Fondly known as the Steve Borsch iPhone Boogaloo.
Well, but here's the problem. The problem is my son and wife both have 3G. My daughter has 3G, and I have a 3GS. So the three of them want to upgrade minimally to a 3GS. And my daughter, of course, now she's going to be working at the Apple Uptown store. And she is absolutely, Dad, of course, I'm going to get the new one, whatever it is. And supposedly the screen, obviously the screen will be brighter and higher resolution, camera will be better. I mean, they've got to compete with 8-megapixel cameras.
It's going to be multitasking and all of that, I'm sure.
So. Yeah. Well, yours has like an 8-megapixel camera, right, Phil?
Yep. Sure does. It's really nice. It's actually got 2 cameras. The Evo's got 2 cameras, one up front and one in back. So I haven't had a chance to experiment with the conferencing and using the front facing camera, but, yeah, the 8-megapixel camera is, well, of course, light years ahead of what I'm used to. And the video is very good for such a small device. And, you know, I may have a flip video that I need to sell now. So.
Well, I would like to, and Tim and Graham, if you'd join me in welcoming Phil to the 21st century.
Thank you so much.
Only a decade in, but
the last one to get on the palm sinking, get off the palm sinking ship.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. But just add it to the museum.
It was really funny because I actually, for some reason, my old 750 Palm had a 755 Palm had a cracked screen in it earlier this week. And I took it in. I thought, I don't know if I really want to bother to switch this. But again, the guys over at Sprint were great. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, hey,
it was a lot of fun. Met a lot of interesting people. I think you'll enjoy the video. I think one of the biggest things was really funny was the, as you went down the line, the geekier the line got, we had a, you know, a woman and her daughter were first in line and I was there. And then, the woman next to me had her iPod Touch out watching an episode of South Park, and the guy next to her was reading some fantasy novel. I was thinking, you know, we keep going down here. We're going to progress to like a Star Wars t-shirt, a guy dressed as a stormtrooper.
Princess Leia. You know what, though? I mean, here's what's been so amazing to me, and it's happened more at the Mall of America than any place else, where I've gone and my wife's gone into some miscellaneous store and I have no interest in being standing around having her hold things up, say, what do you think of this? So I sit on the bench and I watch people go by and I'm outside the store. And one day, maybe 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting by a guy who's got to be 65 if he's a day, and he's holding his iPhone and he's going through it. And we start to talk and I'm asking him, you know, what sorts of things do you like to do on that? And he starts rattling off all these apps. He's using Skype. He goes, I love to use Skype on this. Reading news. He has the New York Times. I mean, on and on and on. And I asked him what he had before that. And he said, well, I had this big button flip phone. that was for phone only. He said, I never used it. I'd turn it on and throw it in the car because my kids would make me. And I thought, oh my God. I mean, this is, you know, the people that you're seeing with smartphones is accelerating across all ages. And I'd be interested to try to locate some stats on what's happening with mobile. But,
well, you know, Lisa would be able to help you out with that. Lisa Foote, she's a, that font of mobile.
Yeah, exactly.
Stats.
Exactly. Well, hey, let's just briefly touch on Facebook privacy changes, because that's a big story affecting people in Minnesota.
Had a great conversation yesterday about that, as a matter of fact, at the Java meetup over at the Urban Bean. It was an interesting topic. Good conversation by everybody. I think the general consensus in the room, since many of us are really involved in social media and marketing, where, you know, it's free, it's Facebook, you gotta go with the flow.
Yeah.
So, but there were some very passionate people that did bail out of Facebook.
Well, I'd bailed out of Facebook, but because of the changes, I went ahead and logged back in before the 14 days ran out. So I'm back in. And I've, of course, gone through the 50 iterations and 120 different permutations to make sure that all my stuff is totally private. I'm not really using it, but figure what the heck. And Tim, you stood up and applauded, right?
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw that picture of us at Minibar, and that it actually had you tagged. And I thought, well, Steve can't be tagged because he doesn't have a Facebook profile. And I clicked it and there you are. And I'm like, whoa, that's shocking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so you revived it. So you deactivated it. And I guess they give you 2 weeks to make up your mind. And then you
precisely
you reactivated it before it went terminal.
Yeah.
Because they know you just can't live without it.
Yeah. But how? OK, the four of us, Graham, how often do you use Facebook? Are you in there actually updating your wall, or do you use Twitter to feed it?
I don't use it all that much, but I bounce in there a couple, 3 times a day. I finally gave up trying to put my Twitter feed back in it, because I could not figure out how to do it. And I did it once before and I shut it off. And I remember it took me forever to figure out how to shut it off. But I could not figure out how to turn it back on, because I would rather not go into Facebook and have to do updates all day long, like some people do. Yeah. You know, I prefer to update on Twitter, and my Facebook is all about business and my professional networking. And the same stuff I'm doing on Twitter, my Facebook friends might as well be seeing. But I could not figure out how to get it back in there. So I just stated on Facebook, okay, just click my friend feed button, and you'll see my Twitter updates instantaneously. So that's how I do it now.
There's a good app, though, Graham, that you might want to check out called Selective Tweets. And
I've heard about that.
You just put a hashtag, hash FB.
Yeah, yeah.
In the tweet, and it shows up in Facebook.
Yeah, I've seen people doing that. I used to see a lot more of it than I do anymore. But I never really got into doing that. But you know, hey, it's on Friend Feed, and Friend Feed is on Facebook. So, you know, it's all there, but it's too much to try to update regularly on Facebook. But I work with at least one nonprofit that uses Facebook extensively, the Surfrider Foundation. So I'm all over that side of things, but you know, I mean, what I'm doing in my non-work life, and I'm talking back at them, and I'm citing their events and their causes and things like that. And occasionally I'll throw some more photos on there. Like I keep getting these photos that people send to me that they take of me at events. And in fact, for some reason I was finding some that were taken a long time ago. I don't know if I was getting Google alerts or something, but so I thought, well, I kind of have this group of photos of me at events and that I knew about, but now I'm finding more photos that people snap and then they tag me or they send them to me or something. And so, you know, I'll throw those on there. And I just hit 400 friends on Facebook. And I went and thanked the lady who was my 400th friend and told her I'd buy her a drink. And then immediately I turned around and looked back in an hour, and I was down to 398 friends. Okay, you don't want me buying drinks for you then. Well,
stalker.
You know, screw
stalker.
You.
Stalker.
So, and then I'm back up to 399. But at that 400 level, that was hard to break, you know?
Wow.
But they all are close personal friends. I'll guarantee.
There you go. Say, I wanted to mention under the umbrella of accelerating change, maybe we can talk about the Google I/O stuff that happened with Google TV and Android and all the ad stuff they're doing and HP buying Palm and so on. But I had an experience over the past 8 to 10 days that I think might be of great benefit to any of our listeners, especially startups or small to mid-sized businesses. We signed up with RingCentral, which is a hosted PBX. And bottom line is we're going to save almost $2,000 a year on our telephony. And it's literally, you know, you can have an outgoing message, you can have follow me, you can have unlimited extensions, you can have it go to any app, you can set up departments, you can have digital fax, it comes with digital fax. They have a mobile phone app, so I've got it running on my iPhone, so I can call out from my iPhone, and people see Marketing Directions Inc. phone number for caller ID. And it is not easy to set up. I've got like 40 hours into the setup and time on with tech support and so on to get it just right. But I will tell you that it is, talk about the most amazingly disruptive setup that I've ever seen. So for $50 a month, I've got 4 incoming lines. I can create unlimited extensions. So I could say, you know, for press 5 to talk to Phil, 6 for Tim, 7 for Graham, and it would ring whatever phones you wanted it to ring. It would take me an hour just to describe the entire system.
Well, how can something be disruptive if it takes you 40 hours to get it working?
Well, it's disruptive from a cost perspective. You know, this is the crap that the Ma Bells should have done years and years ago. You know, allow us to set stuff up, use a web browser to be able to configure things and do your own personal greetings without having to use a phone, you know, and touch tone to access everything and try to keep it all in your head. But it's disruptive because just on the Quest alone, we're saving about $160 a month.
Yep. Well, I know all about this because our friend Gary Doan, when he was running Sodacom, they were doing that very thing, he was going on and on about how it was so disruptive for businesses, and I think the setup was a lot easier with whatever tools he was integrating together for his offering. I don't think people were taking 40 hours to set his up. There's been a lot of advances made in that area, and the hosted PBX business is getting to be a good sized business. Now he also had an on-premise solution, you know, an appliance solution.
Right. Right.
But he was basically selling both. But now that he's jumped over to Atmail, I don't know what Sodacom's doing, whether that's sort of inactive now or what. But
I just think about all of the organizations that are startups that would love to have the ability to have an outgoing message to say, you know, press 1 to talk to Joe Schmedlap and Joe's, you know, over in Michigan. Press 2 to talk to, you know, Sally Jones and Sally's in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever people happen to be, and then have a company directory that you can just dial by name. And it's a real accelerant for virtualization of business.
Oh, yeah.
And it does need to get easier to administer. And I will admit that it took me a long time to set it up because we wanted to connect up our analog fax machine. And now I got to go out. I bought a new router. I've got to go in and set up a new router so that I can do port triggering, because the Apple AirPort Extreme doesn't do that. And it, I know I'm getting geeky, but anyway, let's, oh, it's Skype calling over 3G now. Phil, you ought to download that. Give that a
call. It's not available yet for Android.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
As far as that goes. All right. It's supposed to be soon, someday, something like that. It's available on Verizon.
Got it. Got it. But
not as an Android app. Am I right on that, Tim? I'm right on that. All right.
What? I didn't catch that.
The Skype app
over Android.
Yeah, it's only available on Verizon until I think the end of the year.
Ah, gotcha.
On the Android side.
On the Android side, right.
And Quick's got a conferencing thing that's available on the Sprint side. So haven't dealt with that yet.
Okay. Well, the other thing I wanted to mention, you know, as we've been talking about Adobe and Flash and the issues they've been having with Apple on running on iPad and so forth, that Adobe announced a technology that it's not a product yet called Smokescreen. And its intent is to enable Flash content to play on Apple's iPod Touch, iPhone, and iPad, kind of. And the way it gets around it is it runs entirely in the browser. And they're positioning it as a technology for publishers to create content. And they also have a new direction relative to print publications. They're going to have a runtime application for the iPad specifically, and you'll be able to create publications like Wired Magazine's new pub for the iPad and deliver it. I think this, when you think about Minnesota, and when I was with Apple in the pre-press space back in the 90s, there were 55,000 people at that time in 1999 working in printing and publishing in the state of Minnesota. Now, granted, that's printing houses and presses and, you know, and everything, but the design community, as we all know, is huge here, and it's going to be tools like this that will allow people to make the shift, I think, to more digital delivery, because right now it's still, I think it's still too hard.
Well, it makes sense from an Adobe standpoint, because they are a, you know, tools company,
right,
and they do have a commanding presence in the printing and publishing space. So having them, giving them the ability to create this output from InDesign or Photoshop or whatever is a great idea. But I think that the most compelling content that will be displayed digitally on the iPad and other tablets and on mobile devices will probably be something that won't have a print paradigm at all. It will be a complete multimedia. So I'm not sure if this long term will be something that'll be that interesting from a transitional standpoint, though, from going from print to digital. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, they're positioning a new tool set for iPad publishing. I'll put something in the show notes about that.
Well, I bet you we're going to see something on Monday that is going to blow this out of the water.
You know, I hope so. I really do.
Well, because if you think about it, Apple has lots of different technologies within the iLife suite already, that if they come up with, you know, iLife 2010 that has this built-in native ability to do rich publications for the iPad and the iPhone. They already have, you know, huge installed base, and it's, you know, $70 to get this thing. That will be a home run, I think. And then we won't be talking about this Adobe stuff, but the professionals will, because they're deeply embedded in the Adobe workflow right now. And anything that gets them onto the iPad is good news.
Yeah. Well, back in 2007, of all, you know, to tell you how long ago this one was, or excuse me, 2006, December of 2006, I did a post on my own blog about Apple will own mass market web applications. And I talked about iWeb and how it was the closest thing that I'd ever used to a page layout program for the web. Because you could drag and drop images on there and resize things and add drop shadows and all of that. And, you know, granted, it was a container that and a page layout that wouldn't work with IE6. And, you know, it had a lot of limitations. But I saw the possibilities of what that tool could do. And it's always and remained positioned as kind of a cheesy consumer web creation tool. And yet I can really visualize what Apple could do with, you know, cutting it, especially when you look at, geez, my God, Final Cut and Logic and all the pro level tools. I mean, they certainly can come out with whatever they want to come out with.
Indeed. And I'm still perplexed. I haven't done anything with iWeb because it does have a lot of potential, but they've never really taken it beyond the 1.0 stage.
Right. Right.
Even though I think it's had three revisions.
But yeah.
Anyway, they keep adding new themes is all they do.
Yep. Yep. Hey, Graham, tell us about your recent adventures at these shows you've been at. Now, you're at two different events, right?
I went to one location, Denver, and it was Cloud Camp Denver the first night, followed up by the Glue Conference 2 days following. And it was great. It was Geek Heaven, very well attended, way more than the year before. It's a second year event, drew a lot of big names, and very, very well received, and a huge amount of coverage online. I was live blogging it, and the Twitter, if you go to the hashtag GlueCon, you'll see they're still talking about it, posting all the presentations and that sort of thing. So it was great. And we had quite a Minnesota contingent there as well. We had George Reese from Instratus. We had Jason Baker, CTO of Visi, ReliaCloud. My friend Jamie Ostheimer, developer. Let's see who else. Andy Morgan, the VP of Technology Strategy at Internet Broadcasting, was there again. And I might be missing some others, but we had a good contingent, and you know, I got to see a lot of my contacts, my VC buddies in Boulder, who are really behind it, and we had many good luminaries showing up to speak. There was a discussion, an interview by Chris Shipley, formerly of the demo conferences, right. Interviewing the director of platform at Twitter, Ryan Sarver. That was great. We had, who else did we have that was some big names? Oh, some people from Google, Chris Messina talking about XAuth, and another guy, I didn't catch the real geeky sessions. There were three breakouts, and I didn't choose to sit in the really geeky stuff most of the time. I was in the cloud storage stuff and the API stuff. But there was another guy from Google, Brad Fitzpatrick, talking about Webfinger. That was a new one on me. There was a guy talking about the Cassandra database, inside Twitter's choice. And a lot of talk about APIs. It was a real API fest. As my friend, my new friend Alex Williams from Read Write Web out of Portland, he wrote a post on Read Write Cloud about open API madness. The party has just begun for cloud developers. It's like an API festival here at GlueCon. And that's how his post opens. And it was all about APIs. It was a whole series of great talks about APIs, and those were standing room only. And, you know, that seems to be where everybody's going. And one of the sponsors were the guys from Alcatel-Lucent, who have a new initiative called OpenAPIService.com, and they picked up my live blog. You know, I was using Scribble Live again, and I had it on my own blog, and we also put the code into a post on their OpenAPIService.com blog, and so it was running concurrently in two places. Anyway, I put up a Flickr set, and I posted a few follow up posts with audio interviews, a couple on cloud storage, which was one of the main things I was looking to learn about there, and another one on a graph database called Infinite Graph, which is real interesting. So a lot of content was getting posted from Broomfield, Colorado, the Omni Interlochen Resort, really nice new venue where we hadn't been before. And Defrag in the fall will be back at that same venue. Huh. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. How many people did you say were from Minnesota?
Half a dozen? We probably had five or six at least. And there were a few others that wanted to be there that couldn't make it for various reasons. And you know, they really like Minnesota. I mean, the guy who runs the event, Eric Norland, he used to live here and he's worked with companies here and visits here regularly. And he's actually talked about, in fact, he always asked me, he said, what do you think? Could I do a glue kind of event in Minnesota? Would it pull off? Would it work? And, you know, he's always asking me. And I said, well, yeah, we got a lot of free events here. And he, you know, he always says, well, you know, free, I don't do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said, well, you know, yeah, let's look at it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of interest. We got a big developer community. I mean, our developers would have loved the content. A lot of them, I'm sure, were following along and are reading about all the good stuff that was presented. It was a developer event, big time. You know, I mean, I was hearing stuff. I had not the foggiest notion what they were talking about in some of these sessions. But you know, like the CAP theorem, and then NoSQL. There was a lot of talk about that. There was a great presentation. You'll have to go see my Flickr set. The guy who's the creator of JSON. Douglas Crockford did a great presentation on gluing together web apps in the cloud, and he drew huge applause when he put up a big slide with huge type IE6 must die.
Oh yeah.
And talked about how, you know, do we have to wait till either these people die or their PCs die or what? But it's like it's ruining a lot of stuff, you know. And so, you know, he gave a great talk. And then one of the guys from Alcatel-Lucent, Ross Turk, formerly of SourceForge, gave probably the favorite talk of the whole thing was right after the gluing together web apps in the cloud. He gave a talk on the great hookup, 7 steps to connecting service providers with app developers. And it was about smarting up the dumb pipes. So you might want to go look at that too. Again, just go to hashtag GlueCon, GlueCon. And there's a ton out there. Lots of good links to good you know, slide presentations and videos.
Huh. Wow. Speaking of events, what's coming up this next week or in the next couple of weeks? I've been sort of poking around, but
Social media breakfast on the 18th.
And that's the one at the Target Center.
Target Center, only 40,000 seats available. So yeah, get your tickets now.
God, I gotta hurry. Yeah. Okay.
So that's going to be a huge Twitter screen.
Yeah. Well, if anybody can get on, we'll see. We'll see. Well, and I, if I can get a 3G connection,
yes.
I actually have a little tethering app on here.
Oh.
My iPhone got out of jail. So I,
you jailbroke your iPhone?
Yeah. Well, Jeez. You know why? Cause I, there were two occasions where I absolutely had to get on with my iPad and I couldn't. And I just said, that's it. I'm done. And so now I need to figure out what I'm going to do going forward with AT&T's new plans. But
they've just got to change that. Apple's got to open that up to more carriers. Just, you know, cause you can't be just so limited by AT&T's. I mean, they don't even support tethering, legitimate tethering at all. And it's been a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
It's crazy. Well, and then they've got all these crazy plans where you're going to be spending a lot of money just to get, you know, usage of your phone for data.
Right, right.
There's a real good chance that Apple's making some good money off of that deal. I'm just throwing that out there.
So. Yeah, but Phil, when 2.2 Froyo comes to your Evo,
yes,
you'll be able to do legitimately out of the box Wi-Fi tethering, just like a MiFi.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they charge you an extra $30 for that, but that's half of what a MiFi costs a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Android, I think, will force the iPhone to support some sort of Wi-Fi like thing, so you don't have to jailbreak your phone.
I'm sure there's other ways to tether to this Evo, don't you think?
Yeah, there are especially if you root it mm-hmm. and install some pretty geeky stuff. Mm-hmm. There is an application though that does it's PDAnet actually, which is mm-hmm. an old Palm app, strangely
yep.
enough.
Yep.
That is one that you can buy and it works. But it doesn't really tether. It's not a Wi-Fi tethering like what right. Steve would want.
Right.
It's more of a Bluetooth kind of a deal. So
yep.
anyway.
Interesting.
But we digress.
We do digress. So, we got Minnesota Cup coming up shortly?
Well, yes. it's in process where they're yeah. you know, they don't name the semifinalists until, is it late July this year? It used to be August. I thought I saw it was late July.
They're gonna do a finalist thing in June. In fact,
semifinalists, you mean?
Semifinalists
June.
Yeah, in late June. I need to double check the dates, but yeah. Minovate has been invited to live blog it and live stream it. So I'm going to be going over to the James J. Hill Mansion to test out the wireless connection to see if it can handle
the mansion or the library.
No, the mansion.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where they're doing this. Reception.
That's what I thought. I should double check all this, but then we're also going to do it in September during the event.
The final. where the finalists are named and the final winner.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's a fun opportunity.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. We'll be
looking forward to covering
that. And to just end our little adventure here today, talking about things that are coming up. What about Monday? What's Apple going to do on Monday? New iPhone? I say yes. New OS X, probably.
No, I don't think they're going to see OS X.
Okay.
I think it's all about consumer electronics. It's all about the iPhone and the iPad.
Okay.
And possibly Apple TV. Mm-hmm. Because you've seen rumors that the new Apple TV is supposedly running the iPhone OS, which yep. makes a lot of sense.
That was my prediction this year. Yep.
Right. So I think it's going to all be about that. I don't think we're going to see a follow on to Snow Leopard for at least another year. So, you know, I don't know if this means the end of the Mac as a platform or the beginning of the end of the Mac. But clearly they're focused on the mobile devices right now.
No question.
And that's all that you're going to see on Monday, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in Jobs' D8 conference talk, I mean, it's clear that we're in the post-PC era. And that just is what it is. Well, also, what do you think the likelihood is that Steve Jobs will agree to a cage match with Eric Schmidt?
I think that's a long shot.
But I think they're going to do that knife fight thing where they
wouldn't that be great?
Tie one hand together each that's other right. and then the knife in the other, and then they just kind of roll around on stage. I think that's it's going right. to happen.
But I do think that we're going to see some application of the data centers that they're building in North Carolina. So I think you're going to see the kind of iTunes in the cloud, probably paired with Apple TV and the iPad. So you can store all of your music up there and stream it at any time.
Yep.
I've also heard rumor that Mobile Me is supposed to be made a free service, which also makes a lot of sense. And they'll probably have, you know, premium tiers that you buy extra storage or whatever and you pay money. But for the most part, all the syncing will be free.
Well, I've been stunned that Apple hasn't done more with Mobile Me. I've used Mobile Me you know, the back to my Mac service and, you know, things of that nature. Find my iPhone is one of the primary reasons that I bought the family plan, mainly so I can keep track of everyone else. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Alex, Biz, and Michelle.
Big Brother's really Steve Borsch.
There we go. But when I think about like Dropbox, I'm sure you guys, I don't know if you guys all use Dropbox, but Dropbox has revolutionized what we do and how we do it with work, because we share folders with designers that we do work with. We share folders with correspondents who just have to drop it in and be done with it. And, you know, when they're taking photos or they're at shows that they're covering for us. And we use it personally. I've got a Dropbox for my kids and wife and I that we put, and I have a highly secure .dmg with data in it that they need to have access to in case I get hit by a bus, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, it's, and why hasn't Apple beefed up iDisk? Why haven't they triangulated the cloud with the desktop, the iPad, in the same way? Because Dropbox is fabulous. I don't have to use iTunes to send keynote presentations over. I just drop them in and into Dropbox and have access to them.
Yeah, no, I think that that's going to be part of the Monday announcement is their cloud strategy.
I hope so.
So this iTunes in the cloud, what they're going to do with Lala, which is probably the iTunes.com kind of idea, and yep, Mobile Me. So all of that, I think, is going to come, and at least I'll have a vision for it, if not announcements, and that we're not going to hear anything about any Macs at all. It'll just be all mobile device.
Wow. So that'll be interesting.
If Steve Jobs mentions the Mac OS during the course of the presentation, then I think we have our podcast live from, I don't know, pick a nice place for breakfast, and Tim will buy. What do you think?
Yeah,
I like that.
He's going to mention Mac OS, but he's...
so we're backpedaling, are we, Mr. Elliott? Dun, I understand.
But there'll be no major announcements. I mean, he has to acknowledge it. It's a developers conference. You know, what is he going to say? Oh, we're killing the Mac? No, of course not. But I think that the most of the announcements are going to be iPhone, iPad, and cloud related.
Nothing on air, you think?
No, I don't expect there's going to be any Macintosh or OS X related big announcements. He's obviously going to have to address it probably at the beginning with stats or what have you. But I still think everything is going to be iPhone and iPad and cloud related. I don't think it's going to be, you know, hey, you know, here's the next version of OS X. I mean, they're running out of cats for one thing.
Hey, what do you mean they're running out of cats? Oh, they're running out of cats.
They're running out of cats to name these OS things.
Oh, come on. There's Lynx, there's Cougar, there's all sorts of cats out there.
They're going to come up with Mac OS 11, maybe? I don't know.
Why not?
Maybe.
Then they could reform Spinal Tap for that. That would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome. Well, 9 to 5 Mac,
event, isn't it?
9 to 5 Mac had a report that Apple's planning a major update to Safari. So Safari 5 will include a reader functionality. It'll be 25% faster to bring it up with Chrome and Opera in terms of JavaScript rendering, a Bing search option, improved HTML5 support, Safari developer tools. So, you know, this whole notion that you just brought up, Tim, about iWeb and iLife type publishing. Well, why wouldn't stuff be WebKit based? So this little Fluid app that I know you guys have probably seen me use, where I create these site-specific browsers for all of my different workspaces. So I've got a Minovate one, I've got my Connecting the Dots one, I've got my company one, I've got a research one, and a Google Workspace one, and they're all WebKit-based browsers, site-specific browsers. Well, I keep looking at that and say, boy, if there was a way for me to package that up and distribute it in an installer without having to get, you know, load the developer tools and all of that, now all of a sudden I'd have a packaged WebKit-based application that I could just transfer to the iPad. And I'm just wondering if that's what we're going to see. because that'll be huge.
Yeah. Hopefully.
I mean, are you going to see that on Monday or just sometime?
No, I think it would be on Monday because remember, anything that they do at WWDC is all about throwing the stake in the ground, you know, a year out so the developers can work toward a vision or can work toward a product set or can work toward leveraging a platform and APIs. And I think they're going to roll out something that's going to be a major WebKit based direction.
That'd be nice. Have you seen that Pulse app that's for the iPad? It's a RSS reader.
No, I use a different one. What's Pulse? It's Pulse.
Yeah, it just came out. It's two Stanford students, I think, or recent grads that did it. It's a visual RSS reader. It actually looks very interesting. So.
I don't have an
iPad, so I can't check it out. But
well, Graham, let's you and I go look at it then, right?
I'll go grab it.
Yeah, because I know, Graham, you were looking for some kind of RSS reader-like thing, and were disappointed with what you found.
Yeah, and I vaguely recall reading something about this, but I haven't gone out and tried to get it, so I will now.
Yeah, if you go to my Facebook wall, there's a video that's about halfway down of it in use. It looks pretty interesting.
Huh.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, you know, a couple people have said this, and this is one of the reasons why I actually love to be an early adopter of technology, because you really start to live with it and you really, really get a sense of what it does and what the changes are. And I found little things like using my RSS reader that I use. I use one called NewsRack, and it allows me to send something, an article to Instapaper. I can Twitter it. I can email it. And it marks it as read in Google Reader so I can triangulate with a cloud. But what it does is it allows me to send articles to clients and to friends and my family. I can tweet stuff easily. And it's a much more relaxed way to interact with content. And I know that sounds weird, but I've really been thinking about it a lot lately, about how almost peaceful and quiet the interaction is with the iPad from a content management standpoint. And again, I know it sounds kind of like, woo, you know, it's kind of metaphysical there, Steve, but it does. I'm really starting to get a good sense of what the shift in paradigm has done, especially for a guy like me with attention deficit, a gift for attention deficit hyperactivity. It's so distracting to have all this stuff on the screen and all these things happening. And sometimes I'll go in and start doing an email and realize, oh, wait, I came to this Google workspace to do something completely different. And I'm distracted now for a half an hour. And I'm sure that happens to you guys as well.
Always.
So always. Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah. Steve, what'd you say?
So Steve, do you miss having a MacBook Pro, you know, available to take with you? Or is the iPad okay as a mobile device?
I do, because I haven't yet been in a situation where I had to do anything really serious with the iPad. Other than our live blogging adventures, which actually worked much, much better than I had hoped. But I can't get into the nitty gritty of things that I need to get into with the iPad. And I don't see that changing for probably 6 to 12 months until the FTP apps are really good and the multitasking is here and all of that. I won't be able to do anything really, really serious with it. And plus the fact with a laptop, I use Quicksilver. And so I can make things, I can bring things as fast as I can think about an app or something I want to launch, I can launch it because of Quicksilver. And I miss that because I'm, you know, clicking around with my finger and trying to do different things. And it's just a different paradigm. And that's why I sold my MacBook Pro. I mean, to live with it, to really get a sense of what it is and where it's going. And I don't know. I just, I'm still kind of torn about it.
So when you travel, Graham, you take both your MacBook and your iPad, right?
Well, that's an interesting question. I was just going to chime in about that. I took all three of my Apple devices to the Glue conference to Denver, and I ended up, you know, sitting in the sessions and having them all three going at the same time. I mean, I was multitasking on, you know, by way of three devices. I like live blogging from the iPad, but I had my MacBook with me. But I'll tell you, it just adds more weight to bring all three along. And I was hoping that I would get away from using the MacBook at events like that. And sometimes I did leave it up in my room, and I just I went to certain things with just the iPad and the iPhone. I still prefer to work on the MacBook, I guess, because I can, you know, I can be checking email and I can have the iPad off to the side, looking at, you know, a Twitter stream or something. But I got to tell you one thing that happened to me, Steve, you'd get a kick out of this. I'm on Scribble Live, and I think I was on my iPad, and I wrote my longest, best post. I mean, it was about a 300-word post, you know, on Scribble Live. And most of the stuff I'm doing is much shorter than that. You know, it's maybe 50 words, 100 words, you know, longer than tweets, which is nice. So I'm writing this long post on the guy from Boomi talking about cloud integration, Rick Nucci. And it was really good. And the Wi-Fi hiccuped, and I lost the post.
Oh,
I was so pissed. And
what were you writing it in?
What's that?
What were you writing it in?
Scribble Live, the Scribble Live app.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, I have on my iPad as well as on my iPhone. And but that I won't let that happen again. That I don't know how I'm going to prevent it, but you know, the Wi-Fi was absolutely great the whole time, and he had it set up for 900 consecutive users. Well, there are only 350, 375 people at this event. But he called out from the stage, Eric Gnarly, said, but we set it up for some of you wise guys who are showing up with three devices.
That's what I was just going to say. 300 people times three devices. There you go.
Yeah, right. But I don't think there were too many people there with three devices. But I was having a ball, you know, with the iPad on one side of my MacBook and the iPhone on the other. And I might have had the iPhone on 3G, though. But anyway, yeah, that was unfortunate. But I have no complaints whatsoever, either using the virtual keyboard on the iPad to blog from, or I was also carrying my Apple Bluetooth keyboard, physical keyboard, which I absolutely love. It's got an even better feel than the MacBook keyboard. So I can blog from either one of those keyboards. But, you know, when I've got Wi-Fi now, interestingly, the MEMA event that I live blogged before I went to Denver, that talk by the VP of marketing of Virgin America Airlines. Right. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They had no Wi-Fi there. They had two frickin' Wi-Fi networks, neither of which was working. It was at Solera. And there was another event going on. Maybe that's why it wasn't working. There were too many people trying to get on it or something. So I live blogged the whole frickin' thing from my iPhone, my Scribble Live app on the iPhone. Of course, I only did about 20 posts, I think, you know, and they were all fairly short, but it worked. And, you know, I mean, as you use the virtual keyboard on the iPhone, you get pretty adept at it, you know. And I was telling my friend from Read Write Web, Alex Williams, that at in Denver that I've actually live blogged an event on my iPhone. And he was so impressed with that, you know. Of course, I don't think he realized they were just short bursts. But anyway, he ended up mentioning that in a post he did at Glue that, you know, I don't know what he was talking about, but that some people actually live blog from their iPhones, like Graham Thickens. And then he does a link.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, I actually read something else that he wrote where he said, you know, there's there's some guy in the back with three devices and his head's just flipping back and forth and he's looking kind of crazed.
Well, actually, it's not that hard to look at three screens when you got them so close together, you know. It works for me, you know. I mean, it's my way of doing multitasking right now until we get multitasking. We're going to get it on the iPhone here real soon, right? OS 4.
Let's hope by the end of next week.
Okay, and then it's supposed to be multitasking coming to the iPad in the fall.
In the fall, right.
So I fully intend to go to a lot more events with just my iPad and iPhone and leave the MacBook behind. That's my goal, because I don't want to carry that big honking AC adapter and be searching for a plug, you know, for a plug-in.
And that's the thing that if you turn your screen brightness down, I keep it at 100% all the time, but then when I've done these events, like Tim, you and I were sitting next to each other at Best Buy during mini demo, and I was running my iPad pretty much nonstop for about 2 hours, and I was down to 97% battery.
Yeah.
Because I turned the screen brightness down to 30%, which was just perfect inside of a darkened room, you know, sitting in. And
well, I even leave mine on all the way and it still lasts a long time for me. And then you just plug it in directly to an outlet when you get a break or during lunch or when you're back in your room, and boom, it charges up real fast. And so, you know, I really, really like the iPad at events, and I'm going to more and more of my meetings when I'm just meeting people at coffee shops and so forth and just hauling that instead of the whole shoulder bag. And and I do like that. I just went to Club Entrepreneur this week and hauled along my iPad, although I didn't live blog from that one. But
when they pole dance, don't they kick it?
Pardon me?
When they're pole dancing at Club Entrepreneur. Oh, it's a different kind of club. Never mind. Hey, we should wrap up, guys, because it's
this is at the Minneapolis Club. They don't do that there. It's all very, very upstanding, traditional. Yes. But it was actually fun. They did Pekka Kucha style thing with 20 slides, 20 seconds each or something like that. Yeah. And they had five talks that were really good. It was a fun event. Drew probably 70 or 80 people and lots of good networking. So that was fun on Thursday, I guess it was.
Fabulous.
But now we're off for the summer on that. So there obviously be a lot less local events and national events in July and August, you know.
Yep.
It just winds down. I might be going out to the valley at the end of the month for a couple of cloud events. So GigaOm's doing a good one called Structure that I'd like to get to if I could. And O'Reilly's got an event called Velocity that's the same week. So if I go to the one, I might stop in to the other. That'd see about good. Applying for press passes for those.
We need to get more stuff here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
There needs to be more events.
Yeah, more national events.
More national events.
Has there been any talk about North by Northwest?
Nope.
Well, I haven't heard anything lately.
Either.
And although I did have chats with a couple of people about Big Omaha, that thing drew a huge elite crowd. I don't know why. I don't know about huge, but, you know, it drew all the big players. It was the closest thing to a South by Southwest, you know, in the northern states, if you can call Omaha a northern state, Midwest anyway. That was a few weeks ago, and I was talking to Rick Mon about that, and he was commenting on how good an event it was, and how he was also tempted to jump in the car and drive down there, you know. And Jen Kane, who has run some of our big events locally here, like the MEMA Summit, she told me the same thing. If she'd have had time, she'd have been down there checking that one out too. Because, you know, that we haven't had anything in the internet space remotely as big as that, I don't think. Even though MEMA Summit is a big event, it's not, you know, I don't think it drew the national attention and national speakers that Big Omaha did.
Well, still plenty of stuff going on, so we'll be able to deal with
that. There's the bell.
There's the bell. So there's plenty of stuff to go on, and Let's talk about stuff that exists.
Well, when Graham was talking, though, I just thought of two other events that are coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, yes, sir. Which ones?
There's the FontConf, which is Garrick Van Buren's kind of unconference for web fonts, which is on the 19th.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Unsummit, which is coming back on the 26th, which is, you know, a week after that. So,
oh, I should know this too, because I was tweaking Coco MSP's site and it was right on the homepage. Sorry about that, Don Ball. But yeah.
We'll have to figure out what we're going to do at Unsummit.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. Well, guys, do your indoor chores because it's looking pretty rainy out there.
Got to mow that lawn before it gets too rainy.
But you're going to have to do it tomorrow because it's already
not here in Bloomington. It's not raining yet here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I might have a window of opportunity.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Sounds great. Have a great week, you guys.
Yep.
Take care, guys. Talk to you later.
Bye now. Have fun.